This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Since 9/11, Americans have been forced to confront the fact that the outside world may not share the same lofty opinions of American society, culture, and government. After the attacks, many wanted to know why they hate us, or what did we do to them? Some were quick to claim that it was jealousy or religious radicalism that led them to hate us. Others, including President Bush, claim that they hate us for our freedom. But these overly simplistic evaluations leave much to be desired. Similar to a doctor making a self-diagnosis, Americans may be incapable of providing a truly honest and accurate assessment of themselves. When Americans look at themselves in the mirror, what do they see? Are they seeing what is really there? Or are they just seeing what they want to see? Simply stated, can America ever hope to address the problems plaguing it if it can't be trusted to give an honest, unbiased opinion about itself? A new book titled Stranger in a Strange Land, Encounters in the Disunited States by Gary Young, delves deeply into the American psyche in an attempt to uncover how we view ourselves, our country, and the world. As an Englishman traveling in America, Gary Young was able to see firsthand the current state of the American experience. And what he found out was that America is as disunited as it is powerful. Our Michael Jones gets an outsider's perspective on America from author Gary Young.
Right now, a lot of people are skeptical about the path that America is on. Why do you think they're skeptical? What have you perceived to be the reasons that they are feeling the country is on the wrong track?
Well, I think there are two main things. The first is that America was born after the genocide and all of that, obviously, of the Indians. Modern America was born as an anti-colonial project. And then the path that America has taken, particularly since the end of the Second World War, has been a much more colonial project. And so the instincts of America, as of many Americans, as freedom-loving, and America is a country that spreads freedom and all the rest of it, regardless of how that works out in practice, is in conflict with what the country's actually doing. So that's one reason for a kind of skepticism.
It's a good time to be a critic in America. In the title of your book, you refer to the U.S. as the disunited states. Why do you feel that we are disunited? And what forces are driving us apart?
Well, I think that the common perception here is that it's Bush that has disunited America. I don't think that's true. I think he's deepened the divide that already existed, but the divide was clearly there from the way that he was selected president by the judges in 2000, that America was already very evenly split. And I think that there is a kind of a really interesting and important question mark that Americans have about the direction of the country. There is a real sense of ownership of this country that many people have, but a real conflict as to its direction, which at times looks like a conflict between empire and non-empire, between the modern and the medieval, between kind of, you know, the two sacred texts of the country, to me, seem to be the Bible and the Constitution, and they don't always meet in the same place. So on the one hand, and these things kind of mix in a weird way together. So it's a country that has a level of religiosity that is closer to Pakistan than it is to France or Germany. On the other hand, it is a country where, you know, it's one of the best places in the world, or one of the better places in the world, to be gay. So I can't think of anywhere else in the world where you would have that mixture of, say, religiosity and kind of modernity. Added to that, after September 11th, came the kind of broader question of what is America's role in the world? And that has deepened that divide.
It seems that liberal has become a dirty word to many people here in the U.S., but the conservatives don't seem to have any answers to the problems like wealth inequality or global warming or the deficit. Is America in need of a viable third party?
I think America is in need of a second party. I think you have one party with two different names. What's been interesting to me here has been how there has been a huge amount of political energy. You know, the moveon.org people and the, you know, the just the the Michael Moore films and the kind of just to, whether one agrees with it or not, a huge mobilization of people who took time off to go to Pennsylvania or Ohio or New Hampshire to campaign and all the rest of it. On the one hand. On the other hand, the parties are entirely terrible conduits for this level of energy and excitement and engagement. And so all of that energy gets lost in kind of, is it going to be Hillary or is it going to be John Kerry or, you know, people who don't represent anything like the energy that is going on kind of underneath. I mean, liberal has long been a day word. I think it was in the Bush election of 88 that he branded Dukakis a liberal. I think that's right. But I think certainly the conversations that take place here that are progressive don't find an expression, any kind of expression, in your mainstream politics. And that's a real shame.
This is Voices of Our World. If you're just joining us, we are talking with Gary Young, whose new book, Stranger in a Strange Land, Encounters in the Disunited States, exposes the startling inconsistencies and contradictions in American society. As America continues to ostracize our allies and isolate ourselves via our foreign policy, the time for honest feedback is more urgent than ever. It seems that our myopic, overly sanitized view of ourselves has somewhat limited our ability to identify and fix the flaws in our society. How can you repair New Orleans without admitting America's racial problems? How can you help the poor without acknowledging the causes of poverty? How can you win in Iraq without admitting your initial mistakes? The answers to these questions lies in Americans finally coming to terms with their history, their government, and themselves. The search for solutions to our problems can only begin after a serious debate is held about who we are as a people and where we are going as a nation. Indeed, we are a diverse and sometimes divided country, but until we become as comfortable discussing our inconsistencies and mistakes as we are discussing our wealth and power, the country will continue on the wrong track. We conclude our discussion with Gary Young.
The issue of immigration has really become a hot stove issue. To an outsider, does it come across as people concerned about their country and the future of their culture, or is it more xenophobic and racist?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on here. One is, I think, a legitimate issue about law enforcement. You know, ultimately, if you have people on one side of the line who earn 10 times less than people on the other side of the line, how do you enforce a law that stops people crossing that line? And should you enforce a law that stops people crossing that line? But nonetheless, so long as the laws exist, then it's difficult to argue that they shouldn't be enforced. So there is that. Then there is a level of xenophobia and racism. And then there is what I consider a legitimate fear, although not one that is played out in a responsible or progressive way, from poor people about the undercutting of wages. And it's interesting to me that people target, I mean, if the Minutemen really want to do their job, they should gather around all of the car wash places and the strawberry fields, and they should make citizens' arrests on the employers rather than on the employees. And so there is and that, I think, is a legitimate concern that is not actually addressed when you just attack the most vulnerable people in that conflict.
After the Katrina disaster, America's age-old problem with race and class came to the forefront. But a lot of people don't want to admit that America has a problem in these issues. As an Englishman looking at America from the outside during the Katrina occurrence, what was striking to you? What was the most glaring, the most shocking feature of that whole disaster?
Well, the most shocking feature of the disaster itself was the incompetence, the inability to for a country that aspires to lead the world to really address a fairly basic, compared with rebuilding an entire country that you've just destroyed in the Middle East, a fairly basic logistical problem of removing people from a city that's been flooded and protecting that city from floods in the first place, which it could have done. Conceptually, what was interesting was seeing things that I think all Americans actually know, which is that there is a huge amount of poverty in America, and much of that is rooted in racial disadvantage and history. To see that all washed up and presented to you before your eyes on TV, and then to see American people being shocked to something that they already knew. Because I went down to Katrina shortly after the hurricane, and it was like Haiti with skyscrapers. You had all the modern backdrop and all of the kind of medieval kind of existence. Yeah. And that that was an intriguing thing for most of the world to see. Now, race is something that America can talk about, even if it talks about it in a ridiculous way quite often. But class is something that, it stuns me, Americans never talk about. Actually, America seems to be in denial about class, which is, you know, in comparison with England, which is obsessed with class and in denial about race. But that President George Bush, son of President George Bush, former Senator of Tennessee Al Gore, son of former Senator of Tennessee Al Gore, Hoffa, son of Hoffa, Martin Luther King, son of Martin Luther King, Jesse Jackson Jr., son of Jesse Jackson. You have your own level of royalty here, a political class that reproduces itself genetically. And nobody really seems to kind of care.
What is the one thing that Americans need to know about themselves?
I would feel arrogant kind of, you know, saying that there was one thing. But the one thing I feel would help is some sense that the world doesn't stop at the American border. It would be that sense, and it wouldn't just be for America, but for certainly for China, where the environment is concerned, and certainly for the UK, that you can build walls, you can kind of have all sorts of fancy computer equipment to check and stop people coming in, and you can ratify or renege on your trip. But at the end of the day, these lines that make America America or Britain Britain, they're arbitrary. And the one thing that's not arbitrary is the earth. That wouldn't be a specific thing that I would say to Americans, but that as the sole global superpower, the more that America realizes that, the easier it is for the rest of the world.
What do you think? Are Americans honest with themselves? Email us at radio@marynoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Greg Palast and Gary Young are just two of the voices of our world. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. This show was produced by Michael Jones. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please go to www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll or try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.